welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report and continuing to focus on the resource sector, especially down into the equities. We're chatting with Dave Erfley, founder and editor of the Junior Miner Junkie. Now, Dave, you also were at PDAC, and it was actually a couple of years since you had last been at PDAC. I think maybe goes to show the bull market nature, and everyone's going to PDAC now, but give us a rundown. What did you see there? What were your kind of broad takeaways from PDAC?
Yeah, sure, Corey. It's funny. I kind of decided to go at the last minute because, like you said, I hadn't been in a couple of years. And I said to myself, well, you know, why not go to PDAC to finally experience it in a bull market? Because we had been in a bull market, you know, while PDAC was going on for like over a decade. So, but it was as crazy as I expected it. I mean, I think there was 35,000 in attendance, and last year there was 30,000, and the year before that, I think it was 25,000. So it definitely felt like it. But the strange thing was the Sunday is usually the retail day. That's when it's really crazy. But that's on Sunday. It really wasn't that as busy as I expected. Monday is when it really got busy. But a big takeaway was for me was as I was roaming the aisles of the company booths. I like to do that. And there was so many companies that I'd never heard of and with management teams that I'd never heard of. So it's starting to get to where these people are coming into this sector. Hey, it's a bull market. Let's start a metals company. So you really need to be cautious with who you get into here in this bull market.
Well, Dave, just to that point, there's companies sprouting up like mushrooms, but a lot of them are old projects being repackaged with a new name or a new team on an old project. So how do you dive through to find out that the company you're looking at actually isn't one of those recycled projects?
Yeah, well, it's easy for me because I've been in the sector for so long, and they're pretty easy to spot for me, you know, especially when you look at the management teams and look at their track record. I like to bet on the strong jockeys, the serially successful management teams that are de-risking, you know, these district scale size projects and really know what they're doing. So although I do see the biggest upside in the higher risk, earlier stage juniors, that's when you really have to be careful before getting into them. You make sure, you know, when you can't just say, do you have money? Because everybody has money now. You look where that money came from. That's the big one, because just about everybody's cashed up now. But you just look at, okay, where did this money come from? Did management participate? Are there high net worth investors in there that are serially successful mining entrepreneurs? Or, you know, it's because not all money is created equal.
Yeah, that's so true. And it's also true that everyone has money. I do want to follow up with you in terms of the whole Mexico theme that a lot of people are talking about. We all know what's going on with Visa Silver. We don't know when that's going to sort itself out or even how it's going to sort itself out. And then even while at PDAC, the U.S. went into Puerto Vallarta and took down a cartel leader that shut down Puerto Vallarta. So it has even more people wondering just how safe is Mexico when we all know there's a lot of gold and silver companies in Mexico exploring and operating. So what did you find out in terms while at PDAC talking to people about the whole Mexico situation?
Yeah, as you know, we got out of Vizsla, you know, when it was discovered that unfortunately five of those people that were taken were found dead, and the other five, people are assuming that they're dead as well. Just a really terrible situation. But what I found out at the conference was kind of what I already knew from talking to people that I know that have worked in Mexico for decades. It really is a state by state issue. I mean, some states are a lot safer than others. The real bad areas are Sinaloa, obviously, and the Guerrero Gold Belt is another really bad area. I mean, that's, you know, Torex had that situation where people were decapitated several years ago. But the military came in, and now they haven't had any issues since. And their share price really hasn't reacted as if anything is going to be wrong with the Torex mine. So, you know, and also, if you take a look, this isn't new for Mexico. This has happened for quite a while. I mean, if you look back at the 2024 election, I think like 36 or 37 candidates were actually murdered. So this is not a new issue, but it is getting more news, especially national news, with what happened to Vizsla and what you just mentioned about going into Puerto Vallarta and, you know, the Jalisco cartel member, El Mencho, being killed. And you have to make sure that you judge these companies on a case by case business, a case by case situation, and make sure that they're operating in a safer state. I mean, you look at Sonora State, that is a very safe state, and the people that I talk to that operate there, they don't see any issues at all. You know, there might be some military at the airports now just in case, but that's just like one or two people with one or two soldiers with guns there to make sure that nothing happens. So yeah, it's you can't really paint Mexico with a broad brush and say, oh wow, look at what's happening in Mexico. I'm going to sell everything. I'm going to sell all of my Mexico juniors. I mean, I think that would be a mistake.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Dave, because I have had a lot of people write in saying they were considering selling all Mexican juniors or even producers. And it should be reminded for people listening that most of the senior producers are in Mexico if they're doing silver. There's a lot of gold producers in Mexico, senior, mid-tier, small producers. We had a show where we had Guanajuato Silver on. In Guanajuato, they've got five or six mines there. It's a very safe area. It's a mining-friendly area. And people said, it's a shame it's in Mexico or I would buy it. And it's like, I think people are looking at it through the wrong lens, instead of being regional and being, very specific, they're thinking they have to sell the whole area. I would remind people that not every part of Canada or the US is a good jurisdiction either. So when you're looking at jurisdiction to invest in, how do you suss out not just the danger, but other jurisdictions have a permitting risk, or they have a, pushback from environmentalists. So how do you suss out what a good jurisdiction is, and can a good management team still navigate a tough jurisdiction?
Absolutely. I mean, look at what Friedland's done, in the Congo and, all these other places that are deemed as really risky, but their companies have their sh the company's share prices have produced massive returns for their shareholders. You know, I live in the United States and I live in California, and I would never invest in a mining company that operates in California. It's just too difficult to get anything permitted here. So, but if you look at places like Nevada, it's number one on the Fraser Institute list again. And if you look at what's happening in Idaho with these projects now being fast-tracked with the SPEED Act, the Fast Form 41 Act. So, every jurisdiction is different. And also, if like you said, if you take a look at a country and say, oh, that country is good, I'm going to invest in that country, you have to look in a particular jurisdiction and what that country is, like what I just said about California. And also, if we're talking about permitting, it takes a long time to get permitted in Canada, in the United States, in these different jurisdictions. But that is getting better. Ever since Trump came into the White House, it's had an effect on all these other jurisdictions where, hey, we understand how critical minerals are important, and we need more, so we need to get them out of the ground faster, so we need to fast track the permits.
Okay, Dave, let's move just to the gold price. I want to talk and see how you're viewing gold right now. It's still, I think we can say it's in a bull market. There is still a pretty defined trend higher, but this year has already been very choppy. Gold is still up something like 20% this year, but we do need to balance out the geopolitical aspect of all this, where the US has sent missiles into three different countries now just in the first 2 months of this year. And gold had a great move to end January, but since that time, it hasn't gotten back to those highs. It was coming close later last week, but still hasn't quite made it there. Went through a little bit of a drop. I even had somebody message me saying, looks like a double top, or they're saying it could be a double top. I don't know exactly what prices they're basing that on, but either way, gold hasn't been able to get to all-time highs, but it's come real close. How are you viewing the gold price and balancing out what clearly is some geopolitical premiums in here?
Yeah, I mean, it's the Trump administration chaos and uncertainty that's come into the market. The amazing thing is it's really turned the precious metals, both gold and silver, extremely volatile. I mean, you had the gold price and the silver price have these parabolic moves, and then gold had this three session 21% decline, And at this, and its silver had a six session 47% decline. Yet when that took place, the miners only corrected 20%. I mean, usually when you see, if you see the silver price go down that much in such a short amount of time, the miners are destroyed, but they're still catching up to the metals prices, right? They haven't even come close to catching up to how high the metals prices have gone. So now this, in this recent decline, we had the gold price run up to around 5,400 on the rumor that the US was going to go into Iran and force regime change. And now that they're doing it, we've had a sell the news reaction. But now also the stock market has been selling off, and it's got this rounded top. So the miner sell off now is a little bit more worrisome because you've also got some margin call selling in there. So, but the miners so far, I think they've corrected about 13 or 14%, and the gold price corrected about 9%. And I'm not sure how much the silver price has corrected. It's been, you know, it's what it went from, like, it got above 90 for a day or so. It hit like 94, and then it came back down to 80. So it's and now it's at like 83 or 84. It's extremely volatile. But you know, these miners, they start the weakness was bought on Monday, but now we're starting to see these red candles remain on daily charts. So I think that has a lot to do with some of the margin call selling that's going on in the stock market. But it's going to be interesting to see how quick these miners are bought again. If you take a look at the gold price, for instance, the 18-week moving average has been strong support ever since the gold price broke out above 2,000 finally. Remember, it consolidated below 2,000 for about 4 years, and that created a handle. So it was a cup and handle breakout, a 13-year cup and handle breakout, very strong technically. So the gold price has came back and it's tested the 18-week moving average several times, and it did, and it almost did so again when it went up to 5,600 and then corrected $1,200 in just 3 sessions. It came right back down and almost tested its 18-week moving average and shot right back up again. If you take a look at the GDX and GDXJ, 18-week moving average has also been pretty strong support ever since the gold price broke out in early 24. If you look at the GDXJ, that support comes in around 92, and it's about 100 right now. And if you take a look at the GDXJ, that support comes in around 120, and GDXJ is around 134 right now. So if you see the gold price lose $500 tomorrow on a weekly closing basis, then I wouldn't be surprised to see those 18-week moving averages tested again on the GDX and GDXJ before this correction is over.
Well, Dave, just to put a little more color on it, when we looked at what happened on Monday, keep in mind, silver got up to 97. It got up to 97.30 as a high intraday on Monday before reversing, and gold got up to 54.34. I mean, so on this is on the futures price. So when you think about that was only $170 away from the all-time high in gold, and silver, after going down to 64 to get back up to 97, it was a pretty good rally. I have to ask you though, on Tuesday, in the middle of the PDAC, is when we saw those big downdrafts, like 9% down on the GDX, GDXJ, SIL, SILJ, on COPEX. You saw it on the uranium miners, you saw it in lithium miners, you saw it in rare earth and strategic metals miners. Everything was down 7 to 10%. Did we just see the PDAC curse rear its head again after having 2 years off?
Yeah, it sure seems that way, doesn't it? As far as a PDAC curse is concerned, you know, I mean, it's a very real thing because all these companies, they put out all of their news that they've been saving up for right before PDAC, and then we have a news lull. So it's almost like a buy the rumor, sell the fact of all these news releases. It's a cumulative effect, and then we get the PDAC curse. So it remains to be seen whether that's what that is, but we are having a huge downdraft. And it did start to happen at PDAC, but like I said, you just watch those 18-week moving averages. And also, a lot of these juniors, they're not really reacting very badly to this downdraft because, like I said, some of this you can attribute to margin call selling from the stock market, and with generalists really not in the juniors yet, we're not really having any strong reactions in a lot of these juniors that I follow anyway.
I'm still seeing a very mixed bag for the underlying equities, though. The majors are still doing quite well. They're generating a lot of cash, but the developers, the explorers, a lot of them are off their highs, and some of them are significantly off their highs, 30% some off their highs. But again, you look at how much they've moved in the last couple of years, they're still multiples higher of where they were the last couple of years or 2 years ago. Dave, I got to ask you, though, in terms of we keep hearing how these stocks haven't priced in the higher metals prices and they could still move higher from here, but what is the risk reward? Is there a chance that some of these stocks could even sell off 50% more? Is really the reward there in your eyes to multiples higher, even at current prices that are multiples higher from a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I think we talked about this earlier. You have to take it on a case-by-case and stock-by-stock basis. We just had a dart thrower's move in the juniors, right? I mean, where you pretty much throw a dart at a junior and it went up. So, and then I think we talked about either the last time we talked or the time before, like, hey, we're going to have a serious correction eventually. And then when we do, it's going to be like that old Warren Buffett said expression, you know, when the tide goes out, we're going to find out who's swimming naked. And the companies swimming naked are the companies that have marginal projects or marginal management teams and seem like to be possibly just like lifestyle juniors. Those are the companies that they're going to get hit with 50% moves. But if you have, you know, if it's a quality junior and it's de-risking a quality project and they have the access to capital and they have the strong management team, that's going to be a buying opportunity.
Well, Dave, you made the point on our show a couple of times and even on other podcasts you've done that you're starting to move down the risk curve because that's the place where you're going to get the outsized gains now. And some of the companies that have already run a lot, be they producers or some of the better developers that have already gone up 4x, 5x, 6x or more, it's going to be harder for them to keep that pace going. But it brings up the question, should you rotate out of some of the safer names and take on more risk? Or should you hold on to companies that you already have a multi-bagger in and be okay with a double or tripling from here? Because if you've been holding it for a while, it's going to be more than that for you and there's less risk. How do you balance out the risk of getting the upside versus leaving the safer names to go further down the food chain?
Well, in my situation, for my newsletter and my subscribers, I'm doing both, right? I mean, we've had these huge run-ups in these late-stage companies that have gone up 3, 4, 5, and I've got one that went up even 25 times. It became 20% of my portfolio after even trimming it a few times, and I took some more off the table on Monday. So I've got a lot of cash. I've got enough cash to add into three higher risk earlier stage juniors, and that's what I'm about to do. I've identified the three companies, and I'm sitting here watching this correction, and I'm hoping they go lower. And they're really not moving much because they're quality companies. So, like I said, I'm kind of doing both, right? I've trimmed a bunch of profits in several companies, and I've got this cash waiting on the sidelines, and I'm hoping for these stocks to get a little lower. And what I do is I take these companies and I write this detailed report, send it out to my subscribers, and say, hey, I'm taking a initial investment into this company. And initial investment means, hey, I'm taking an entry position and hope that it goes lower. I mean, I've done that several times over the past, I don't know, year or so, when I had some profits to harvest and get into some higher risk juniors. And every single time I get into the company with an initial position, I end up having to pay more for the rest of it because this is a bull market and the weakness doesn't last long in quality companies.
So, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming you're looking mostly at gold stocks. So if I'm wrong, please correct that. But what about silver stocks? Are you playing anything in the silver front, new companies or adding to companies, kind of playing this $90-ish silver price?
Yeah, I'm still sticking with gold, silver, and copper. And right now, like I said, it's the earlier stage companies, the PEA stage, and I'm probably going to add one more drill play. I added one drill play late last year, and I think I'm going to add another one because that's where, you know, those are the lottery tickets. They're very high risk, but if they hit something, you know, you could do really well if it's got a tight share structure and they know how and when to raise money and who to get it from.
Well, Dave, just speaking of copper, we had another mining merger Monday, and it was Arizona Sonoran being taken off the board by Hudbay. We haven't talked about that with anybody yet, so love to get you to weigh in on it because I know that Arizona Sonoran's a position you hold. It's a good senior producer coming in and taking over, so some people will be happy to, I guess, keep on riding with that. But I know that you like to be in the development stage company, so would you be rotating out of that, or would you be holding some of it? How? What's your action plan, and what do you think of that merger?
Yeah, that's that. That was a nice win for us that to happen on the on the Monday at PDAC. It's our second one in the past 6 months. As you know, we had Probe as well. That one, we were hoping for a lot more, but this one, I think it's a good marriage. Hudbay is a fantastic company, and these two projects, their Copper World project and the Cactus project. I mean, once they combine and they get those built, I think it's going to be like the third largest copper district in North America. But they are going to have to come up with $3 billion to construct both of them. But yeah, I think it's a good marriage. I told my subscribers, this is why I hastily sent out a message saying, hey, one of our companies got bought out. Here's the deal. Here's what happened. I'm going to hold on to it for now because I've got this pipe dream that maybe Ivanhoe Electric, who literally has a project, the Santa Cruz project, is right next door. They're literally separated by a road, and I know that Friedland missed out on this on the Cactus project earlier. So I'm holding out hope against hope that maybe he'll make a run at it. I know it's probably a pipe dream, but I'm going to hold on to it for now.
So, Dave, any other stocks? Give us some insights. What do you really like right now? Maybe not the ones that you're planning on adding, but you know how everybody likes to hear about ticker names. Give us a couple, please.
Well, I'll give you another ticker name that had some great news while I was at the conference. I mean, what I did was at the beginning of the year, I had a list of five names in our portfolio that I expected were near-term takeover candidates that had a really good shot of being taken over in the next 6 to 12 months, meaning at some point this year. And Arizona Sonoran was second on the list. The first one on the list was Abra Silver. They came out with some good news as far as their Diablillos project. It's been approved. It's had the RIGI approval, so now it's going to save them like $1 billion in taxes on the project or something. But it was pretty much priced into the stock, I think, because the stock has got off quite a bit. But I look at it as a buying opportunity because I do see this as a near-term takeover candidate. And reason being is the company is, after they've just announced being approved by RIGI, their EIA, environmental assessment permit, is expected by the end of this month. And then that is expected to be followed by their definitive feasibility study to be completed in Q2. And they're already starting like detailed engineering, early works and upgrades to existing infrastructure. They just added to their land package, and they're doing all these things, but they've yet to hire any mine builders to construct the project, and let alone they haven't even made any inroads to putting together a finance package. I mean, this is going to be a $600 billion CapEx. Initial CapEx project that they have to fund, and they haven't even made any inroads to funding it. So that this tells me that, hey, either they're in the works of getting bought out now, or they'll probably get bought out before the end of the year.
Well, Dave, just to that point, I talked to John earlier in the week, and he was saying he's going to start working on the funding package. But that's what every CEO says, as far as there's that delicate balance between acting as if you're going to build it and hoping you get the buyout. But I know there's large companies that have gone in their data room and have visited the site. So, in an event of a takeover, do you typically sell the position right after it's announced? Do you hold, like you've held the last two, hoping for the counter offer, and we don't see many of those right now. Are we going to get the environment where something like Diablillos has two or three, maybe four companies bidding on it? Because if you were going to bid on a silver project, now that Vizsla is in the kind of penalty box, Abra's probably the best silver development project there is. So could we actually see a bidding war? And if they got an announcement from one company, would you hold out on that one to see, do we get a counter offer?
I believe so. Yes, I mean These things that are being that are being bid on and made offers by these majors. I really was shocked that Probe didn't get an offer from Agnico. I mean, we discussed this in the past about how the Malartic project, is right nearby, and Novador is going to be fully permitted by the time that mill is going to run, that mine is going to run out of ore. Or so it's it behooves one to hold on to a company once a merger, once a takeover offer is announced. But it depends on the situation, right? With Probe, it was an easy call because it was an all cash deal, so the stock price wasn't really going to go anywhere, and it was you were going to that was cash in the bank. I was able to wait to the to this year to sell it, so I wouldn't have to pay the capital gains tax right away. I sold it in January, so I don't have to pay that capital gains tax for another year. As far as the Arizona Sonoran takeover is concerned, this is an all share deal, so the stock is going to trade with Hudbay's share price unless a better offer comes along. For until the vote, I think the vote is in May, and if the shareholders approve, which I expect them to, unless that alternative offer comes in, then that is probably when I'll sell it. But as far as Abra is concerned, Kinross owns 4%, so they're the natural suitor. But 4% really isn't that much. So, it depends on the break fee. If John's a pretty smart guy, so he's done such a fantastic job already all down the line with this project. So I imagine he'll probably work in a lower break fee if Kinross is the suitor. And if it's a lower break fee, that opens up the possibility for another company to come in and take a run at it.
All right, Dave, we'll wrap it up here. Thanks for your insights on PDAC and on the markets. Again, much more of a sniper approach right now, but does sound like you are still adding positions. It makes sense to me, but again, that trimming some of the big winners and even some of the ones that maybe just aren't even working out. That also works too, because still opportunities out here, just be more selective. Again, Dave Erfle, founder and editor of the Junior Miner Junkie. Dave, thanks for your time this weekend, and everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend's show. Please be sure to go back to our website, kereport.com, and on your podcast player and on YouTube, just search The KE Report. It's where you can find all our daily editorials and company updates from throughout the week, as well as the full weekend show. So everyone, thanks for tuning in. Have a great rest of your weekend.
The Cortland Economics Report is produced for A.B. Cortland and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Cortland, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Cortland Economics Report.